So today I'm going to discuss and demonstrate some of our preliminary baseline and three-month follow-up data for our text messaging to reduce alcohol consumption, or TRAC, trial. I'm currently funded by the Emergency Medicine Foundation, and which is supplemented by money from the Century Council. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. The TRAC trial, I'm currently the primary investigator, that's me. Co-investigators are Duncan Clark, who's in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh. Cliff Calloway is the Vice Chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine, and Peter Monti, who is the Director of the Center for Alcohol and Addiction Studies at Brown University. I'd also like to acknowledge other people who made this trial possible. My head research coordinator, Jeff Kristen, our computer and support people, Jack Doman and Carolyn Conrad, and our numerous research associates. So our focus was on young adults. Why young adults? Young adults have the, among all age groups, have the highest proportion of hazardous drinking and alcohol-associated morbidity among all age groups. Why do we focus on heavy drinking episodes or binge drinking episodes? Binge drinking among all the types of drinking is associated with the highest amount of injuries. We focused on the emergency department. I'm an emergency physician and clinical researcher. That's my laboratory. We also focused on the emergency department as a site for screening and brief intervention because it's a high proportion of young adults that come into the emergency department. There's more than 50,000 per year in the United States, as well as the proportion that have at-risk drinking behavior. More than 40% of emergency department young adults screen positive for hazardous drinking. And because young adults generally don't seek primary care in the 18 to 25-year-old range, and the emergency department may be the site of their primary care. We focused on mobile phone text messaging, first off because it's widely available. More than 97% of young adults have cell phones and text message on a daily basis. The average text message is sent by or received by a young adult per day can number over 200. We also focused on mobile phones because they allow us the ability to extend the intervention outside of the emergency department. So after they leave the emergency department, the support that they would need in their natural environment. It's also very costly, so from a public health perspective, there's a great opportunity to influence care. Our study design was a randomized clinical trial. We recruited young adults from four emergency departments in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. These, again, were patients. They not necessarily had come in for alcohol-related injury or illness. In fact, 98% of those that were screened had not. And they were between the ages of 18 and 25 years old, and they had screened positive based on the audit C, the three-question audit C, where if you don't know it, it asks a question about the quantity of alcohol they drink, the frequency at which they drink, and the number of binge episodes that they've had. So it was a three-arm randomized trial, randomized in a 2-to-1-to-1 ratio. The 2 is in our intervention group to get more to for secondary analysis for looking at processes of change. We wanted more patients in that group, so we randomized in a 2-to-1-to-1 ratio. Our intervention group is called EA&I, the Ecological Assessments Interventions, and I'm going to describe that further, but it essentially was two-way automated dialogue for 12 weeks, and the dialogue happened twice weekly on Thursdays, which we call our pre-weekend session, and on Sunday, which is the post-weekend dialogue session. The ecological assessment group was essentially an assessment control group, so they did not receive any SMS feedback, but weekly on Sunday we asked them about their drinking behaviors. And our third group was a minimal assessment control, which actually got no SMS-based assessments, but got a text message every week reminding them to follow, complete their web-based assessment at follow-up. So the theoretical models that we used to design our intervention primarily was informed by the theory of planned behavior, where we focused on modulating or modifying attitudes about drinking in young adults, modifying the perceived norms of what a normal young adult drinks, and to improve their self-efficacy for changing their drinking. We also, our intervention was informed by the theory of self-regulation, where we used SMS to support self-monitoring, self-evaluation, and self-reinforcement, which are the three pillars of self-regulation. So here's an example of the Thursday dialogue that would take place. So at 12 p.m. every Thursday for 12 weeks, the intervention group would get an automated text message saying, hey, it's the track research team checking in. Do you plan on drinking this weekend? And they could either respond with a yes or no primarily, or they didn't respond, in which case they would get queued again. But if they said no, they received a message from down below. You can see the message library. So they got a message from the abstinence plan reinforcement library. So we created around 20 messages that the computer would kind of pull from if they said no there. And it would be something like, you know, great, don't be surprised if you feel a lot better in the mornings. Or if they said yes, they did plan on drinking that weekend, they got another branched question. Do you think that you're likely to have more than three or four drinks? It wouldn't say three or four. Actually, if the gender or the sex of the patient was a female, it would say three. If they were a male, it would give them a message that said four. And they could either, again, respond yes or no. If they said, yes, I'm going to drink, but no, I'm not going to binge drink, we would send them a message from the second message library, which was the low-risk plan education, where we would give them a message about drinking education. So remember that drinking, even at low levels, can impair decision-making and cognition. If they told us that they planned on binge drinking that weekend, we express concern, we're worried, or we're concerned, the message would be about drinking this weekend. And then we ask them another question. Would you be willing to set a goal to drink less than, it would again use four or five based on whether they were a man or a woman, when you're out drinking? And they could either say yes or no. If they said no, they were not willing to set a goal, we gave them a message from our message library, which we call the no-goal rule, or rolling with resistance based on MI principles. If you're not ready to set a goal, you can reduce your health risks for every drink you don't take. Or if they said yes, they were willing to set a goal to not have a binge episode, we would give them a drinking strategy and reinforcement for that behavior. Again, we would get back to them on Sunday. So at Sunday at 12 p.m., we would send them a text, hey, it's the track research team checking in. Between Thursday and today, what's the most number of drinks you had on any one occasion? And they were basically categorized by the system into three variables, or three potential outcomes. One is that they didn't drink at all. So if they responded zero, they got a message from the abstinence feedback library. You may find that memory and concentration are better. If they drank but not at hazardous levels or below binge levels, we tell them you succeeded in not drinking excessively. Remember that alcohol is empty calories and can impede muscle growth, or a message like that. That was what we call the low-risk drinking feedback. Or they would tell us that they had a binge episode. And then, again, we express concern. The amount you report is more than what we consider safe. And then try to reflect on how you got in the situation to avoid it in the future. And this would be a message from what we call our high-risk drinking feedback. And at the end of all this, no matter what they said, we would say, thanks for completing your assessments, only however many weeks to go they had, and it was 12 weeks. So these were not manually typed in by a bunch of research associates. We actually used a computer server that's housed in the Office of Academic Computing at the Western Psychiatric Institute at the University of Pittsburgh. All ingoing and outgoing text message dialogue are stamped and recorded, and we could queue this on a real-time basis through MS Access front-end. The outcomes we were interested, the primary outcome for all three groups was based on the timeline, a 30-day timeline follow-back. They would complete at baseline and at 3 months. And our primary outcome of interest was the proportion of participants with any heavy drinking episode or any binge episode. And our secondary would be the average number of drinks per drinking episode based on the timeline follow-back. We were also interested in using text message, what they told us through text messages, to look at outcomes. And this was only available in the EA&I and the EA group because we didn't actually assess drinking through SMS in the minimal assessment control. So our timeline. So our IRB approval was in September of 2012. We registered on clinicaltrials.gov in that same month. We began enrollment on November 1st, 2012. We completed enrollment a couple of days ago. On November 1st, 2013. So the complete three-month follow-ups will be in February, and the complete nine-month follow-ups will be later this summer. Today, you can see here's our flow diagram. So in that 1 year, we approached 3,953 young adults in our emergency departments. We excluded those from screening that were either not medically stable The doctor refused to ask the patient's permission to approach them. The patient was not interested, or the patient had been enrolled in an alcohol study, most likely this one in the prior year. So those included in screening were 2,900. Among those, 1,253 were audit C negative. Also 1,600 had not had alcohol in the last month. Very few did not have a cell phone with text messaging, so only 33 out of 2,930. And only 49 had had past treatment for drug and alcohol, which was another exclusion criteria. So a total of 790 met eligibility. And 160, after they were screened, 163 were not interested in participating in the trial. I excluded those that were enrolled after July 30th for this presentation because we didn't have three-month follow-up data on them. And then there are 30 that we had missing baseline data because of system problems. So today I'm going to talk about 525 that were randomized, again, in 2-to-1-to-1 ratio. In our intervention, there were 261. In the assessment control, or the EA group, there were 135. And in the control group, there are 129. Overall three-month follow-up rate was 80% with no differences between groups. Here's some baseline assessment data to give you a flavor of what these patients look like, what these participants look like. Again, these are the three groups. There were no significant differences among them. They were an average age of 22 years old. They were around 60% female. They were around 50% black, 8% Hispanic. 50% were not currently enrolled in school, so that's a pretty high percentage of non-enrolled participants. 50% were actually living with their parents or family still, but the other 50% were either living alone or with other friends. We had around 60% that were either part or full-time employed at that time. In addition to alcohol, this other substances used, around 40% were smoking tobacco daily. About 50-some percent were smoking cannabis at least weekly, I think was the designation in the last 30 days. And any prescription opiates was around, you could see there, around 12% overall. So, like I said, only the two groups, the intervention group, EA&I, and our assessment control got text message queries on Sundays, and the proportion of participants responding to these overall was around 82%, and you can see that you get some decrease from around 90-some percent in the first week through the 12th week. It drops down to around 76%, and I haven't looked at the statistics on this or whether those become different, but I suspect they may around week 11 or 12. The proportion of participants with a heavy drinking episode, this was our primary outcome in those that we followed up with. So in the EA&I group in the blue, you see across all groups, around 80% had at least one binge episode in the last month at baseline. And that dropped down to 65% in our intervention group. And that was the only one that was significantly different. The average number of drinks per drinking episode in the prior 30 days, I did not show the variance here, which is large, but I just showed the means. So the means at baseline were no different and were around four drinks per drinking episode. And the decrease you can see primarily is in the intervention group, the blue group, whereas the other two groups increased their drinking slightly. If we look at the SMS data between the EA and EA&I groups, and our intervention is in red and the assessment control is in blue, for every week you can see a decrease, but which I think I see is that there's a dose effect probably from week 1 through 12 where the gap between the two groups becomes more significant. So in conclusion, a computerized SMS-delivered behavioral program reduces short-term heavy episodic drinking among at-risk youths identified in the ED. Such a program, although with a small effect size, could have large public health implications due to its scalability. Limitations, obviously, for like all or most alcohol clinical research, it's based on self-reports. In terms of the external validity, I can't speak to whether this would be valid outside of Pittsburgh. I cannot speak whether this would be useful in other age groups including adolescents or older adolescents, or in different drinking subtypes. Like if you were to give this intervention to lower risk drinkers, would it have an effect? And then we still don't know the long-term data, including the 6 and 9 month outcomes that are pending at this time. What are our next steps? So we're working on optimizing the SMS program. It by no means is what I would call optimized at this time. You know, we're working on increasing the tailoring, adaptivity to their needs, as well as working on intra-drinking support. And so we're trying to figure out what the key ingredients are, and some of that will come through our secondary analysis, our process variables. We're also trying to investigate how to improve the self-regulation support. So they may have goals, and I didn't show this data, but in the intervention group, for every weekend, around 60% of the participants that were planning on binging were actually willing to set a goal, and that goal was met in the vast majority, but I think around 80%, but we're trying to improve on that. As well as we're trying to look at whether this benefit of this SMS program is seen when you add it to counselor-based intervention in the emergency department versus a web-based intervention. And we're looking on expanding to other drugs and risk behaviors. Thanks. Any questions? We're actually collecting that at the 9 month follow up. We're actually going to look at that as a variable in its in the effect size, but we don't know yet.
Yeah. Is there any incentive for them to participate in the trial? And what messages? I mean, you're sending text messages without the intervention. What does those look like?
Just sure. Yeah, I'll show you. Yeah. So the assessment control group, or the EA group, did not get any of the Thursday messages. All they got was, they got the first question between Thursday and today, what's the most number of drinks you had, and they wouldn't get any of the feedback.
Did they get any of the proof?
No.
Just
Sunday assessments of drinking.
Mm-hmm. Any incentives?
So incentives to participate in the trial, yeah. Participants got a maximum of $114. If they complete baseline 3, 6, and 9 months. So that's separated up by $20 for completing baseline assessment, $30 for 3 months, $40, and $50. I think, I don't know if that math works out, but it's something like that. It's like a graded scale, but it's a maximum of $114.
And are those assessments like on the phone?
These are all web-based follow-up assessments.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
the incentive through at the University of Pittsburgh, everything for trials is through what's called a PitPay debit card. So when they come into the emergency department, they get administered a card, and we can electronically add money to that card. It can also be tracked. It actually decreased. Yeah. And that may be a measure of the, well, it's actually a percentage. So they actually had to have, to set a goal, they actually had to have planned binging, right? So actually it decreased. It went from around, like I said, 60, I think in the week one it was 65%, to week 12 was around 52%. We're willing to set a goal. It's a proportion. So I think it's the same. I don't know what that means. I haven't thought about it that much, but yeah, I think maybe the people who were going to changed early, and maybe the people who could not change were the people who just didn't set a goal. They just could not do it, and those were maybe the higher risk drinkers, potentially. Yeah, so that was my goal. That was actually going to be a big part of this, not a big part, but a secondary analysis. Unfortunately, when I looked at it, it was only around, like I said, I think 5% of patients that were enrolled in the study actually had come in, and there's numerous complications. And so I started looking in early about what the complications are. Number one, the patients are usually intoxicated, and we keep them until they're sober. And when they're sober, they don't really are not interested in research. They're either hungover or they're in trouble with their parents. And so there's numerous barriers to enrolling patients that have come in with alcohol, or they're severely injured and they're admitted to the hospital. I never get to see them. So that was the intent, but I think we'd have to change our protocol somehow to enroll them after the emergency department visit.